We're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela, chapter 2, text number 10 and 11. This is text number 11, translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation: The extraordinary transformations of the body due to transcendental feelings would never have been possible for anyone but the Lord, in whose body all transformations were manifest. Purport: The ecstatic transformations of the body, as described in such exalted literatures as Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, are practically not seen in this world. However, these symptoms were perfectly present in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. These symptoms are indicative of Mahabhava, or the highest ecstasy. Sometimes, Sahajiyas artificially imitate these symptoms, but experienced devotees reject them immediately. The author admits herein that these symptoms are not to be found anywhere but in the body of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Om Adnanti Vrandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namahum Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this particular text is continuation of the descriptions of Antya Leela of Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu's life can be divided into three sections. He appeared in this world for 48 years. The first 24 years is the Adi Leela of the Lord. Then the 6 years is the Madhya Leela of the Lord. And the last remaining 18 years is the Antya Leela of the Lord. These particular descriptions given by Kaviraj Goswami speak about the Antya Leela of the Lord, the final pastimes of the Lord. And especially this verse focuses on the last 6 years which the Lord spent in Gambhira. And the word Gambhira itself means, so we know the place where he stayed is known as Gambhira, but the word Gambhira itself means that which is deep and difficult to understand. So that reflects the mood that Mahaprabhu was in those last 6 years. And in those years he displayed many symptoms of ecstasy. These symptoms cannot be understood, let alone be described by anyone. And hence Kaviraj Goswami is saying here that these symptoms have never been possible in anyone but the Lord Himself. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport says these symptoms are symptoms of Mahabhava. Mahabhava is the ecstatic symptoms of Srimati Radharani. Who can understand them? And without understanding them, who can describe them? And even if described, who can listen to them and make sense of them? And hence, these ecstatic symptoms are not described in great detail, either in this purport or elsewhere, except in the last few sections of Chaitanya Charitamrita. The last 7 chapters, especially of Antya Leela, gives us a glimpse of the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I was actually not meant to speak this particular class. I was given a slot 2 weeks back, and then that got cancelled. But then the original slot was 4 weeks back. And those verses were much more easier to delve into. So I was really hoping that today also somebody would, a senior Vaishnava would be coming by and this class would be cancelled and I would be not speaking on this verse, because it's not a verse that I'm qualified or I fully understand to be able to speak on. I would still make an attempt to say a few words. And as I entered the temple, I was confused, what should I speak? Because there's two specific things that Kaviraj Goswami is mentioning, but our Srila Prabhupada is making very clear in the purport. Two things, essentially. He's saying these ecstatic symptoms of Mahaprabhu do not manifest in anyone else. And they represent Mahabhava. The symptoms are indicative of Mahabhava, Prabhupada says. So either I could speak on the ecstasies of Mahaprabhu, or Prabhupada says, sometimes sahajiyas artificially imitate these symptoms. So I could speak on the sahajiyas. And I was confused, what is the right thing to speak? And I was praying that please give me some guidance. And as I entered, I was about to enter the temple hall, our Krishna Dharma Prabhu met me on the way. As I was coming in, he was leaving the temple. And I asked him, actually I didn't ask him, he asked me, so what are you going to talk about? And I said, Prabhu, I'm confused, what should I speak? And he said, are you going to talk about the sahajiyas? I said, well, I can. I said, but I'm confused. He said, well, if you speak about the sahajiyas, that'll be very useful. It'll help us. It'll help us to be on guard. But if you speak about the ecstasies of Mahaprabhu, you will lose us. So he said, don't speak on the sahajiyas. And then I asked him, has anyone spoken on the sahajiyas? There are 13 sects of the sahajiyas. What they are, who they are, and what do they represent? What are their philosophies? And how are they even a threat to us, even though we are within ISKCON? Have anyone spoken? He said, no, well, I can't remember anyone speaking about it. You can speak, you can try. So I took that as a guidance coming from the Lord. So I changed the topic that I was going to talk about, and I'm now going to talk about mainly about the sahajiyas, so that we understand that to experience raganuga bhakti is not so cheap. So, how many of you have heard of the sahajiyas or have heard the word sahajiya? Not many? How many of you have? Okay. So who are they? Any particular ones come to mind? The imitators, somebody said. Any, sorry? Yes. In general, they take ecstatic love very cheap. So the word sahaja in Sanskrit means easy. So if you're chanting your rounds very, very focused, imagine somebody nudges you and says, hey, Prabhu, take it easy. Just watch football while you're chanting. What's the big deal? You're chanting anyway. Take it easy. So those who take it easy, those who forego the principles of bhakti, of sadhana bhakti, on the pretext of love being very easy, they are sahajiyas. They say, oh, well, all you need is to feel love. And you can feel love for the Lord. You don't need to do all the, you know, all of these rules and regulations. They are for neophytes. They are not for the advanced. The advanced are above the rules. So take it easy. So sahaja literally means those who take spiritual life easy or cheap. And during Bhaktivinoda Thakur's time, 250 years ago, there was one Babaji by the name Totaram Das. He was a chaste Gaudiya Vaishnava Babaji, like our Jagannath Das Babaji and Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He was also a chaste follower of Mahaprabhu. Totaram Das Babaji was the one who first identified these 13 sects. They are not sampradayas. They are upper sampradayas. What is a sampradaya? Samyak pradayate iti sampradaya. Pradayate, that which is given, samyak, properly. That which comes down properly as it is a sampradaya. Upper sampradaya. Upper is a prefix which means away. So upper sampradaya means away from the sampradaya. They are not a sampradaya. They are simply a sect. Simply a way of thinking and behaving. So these 13 were identified by Totaram Das Babaji. And he sings, Aula baula karta bhaja neda darabesha shahi. Sahajya shaki beki smart jata gosai. Ati badi chudadhari gauranga nagari. Tota kohe ei terar sangha nahi kori. Tota kohe. Totaram Das Goswami says, ei terar sangha nahi kori. These 13 should not be mingled with. These 13 sects of upper sampradayas. So we will try and understand these 13. And if time permits, I will say something about the ecstatic symptoms of Mahaprabhu. Because I thought I would speak a lot more about that. So I'll say something, if time permits. So Srila Prabhupada has actually identified these in many, many places. In Antya Leela, for example, in chapter 14, verse number 6, in the purport, he identifies these 13 with this particular verse. And he says these should not be associated with. So, on 11th of March, 1977, Prabhupada, in a morning walk, in Mayapur, he gives a wonderful analogy of what this Krishna consciousness movement does to people. He said the guru, listen carefully, beautiful analogy. He says the guru is like a matchstick which is lit, which has fire on it, which is lit. The disciples are like a wood. But the wood may be dry or may be moist. Moist wood is contaminated with lots of contaminations and anarthas. A dry wood is ready. So if a matchstick, which is lit, is touched to a dry wood, the wood lights up and the fire is Krishna consciousness. So the guru can light up Krishna consciousness in a disciple who is already sincere and worthy. But some may need a long process to dry up. And this process of drying up, Prabhupada said, is the practice, the sadhana of Krishna consciousness. Imagine somebody tries to light a wood which is moist. It will not light. And in fact, Prabhupada says, a dry wood will light up in 3 minutes. A moist wood may need 300 years, he said. So, giving a sense that one has to work on drying up. It's the process of drying up that one needs to work on. It's the sadhana which one needs to work on. And not assume that simply by association of the guru one can feel artificially the symptoms of ecstasy. This is a beautiful analogy. And before I delve into the different sects of upper sampradaya, I would like to say something about upper sampradaya or sahajiyas in relation to ISKCON, our own movement. We are not entirely immune to the mood of these sects. These sects exist outside, and their mood may sometimes creep in into our society. So we need to be on guard. I'm not saying this. Prabhupada, in a conversation on January 24th, 1977 in Bhubaneswar, he was speaking to his disciples, Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj, Jayapataka Maharaj, Satswarup Maharaj and others. And Prabhupada says, a very strong statement. He says, My Guru Maharaj used to say, when our men will be sahajiyas, they will be more dangerous. And Satswarup Maharaj, just to confirm that he heard it right, he says, our own men, and Prabhupada says, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, that when our own men will be sahajiyas, oh, they'll be more dangerous. So our men are becoming, some of them are becoming sahajiyas. This very word he said, that when our own men will be sahajiyas, they'll be more dangerous. Prabhupada, this is from Prabhupada's conversation with Satswarup Maharaj. So the mood of these sahajiyas, why does these deviant mentality creep in? Even amongst the sincere practitioners. That's a very fundamental question we ask ourselves. So in Madhya Leela, chapter 12, verse 135 purport, Srila Prabhupada explains to us, there are five things that give rise to this mentality, this deviant mentality in the practitioners of bhakti. What are those five things? The first, kutinati, which means fault finding. We all find faults, always in others, never in ourselves. Because to find fault is natural for one who is full of fault himself or herself. So we all find faults, and it's that fault finding that results in the mood of separating and doing something different. The second, Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, is pratishthasha. When one wants to desire name and fame, one is always wondering, how can I be more recognized than the rest? And in that fervor, in that feverish mindset of recognition, more and more recognition, one may split from the main branch and become a deviant. The third is jiva himsa, envy towards other living entities. Even when two devotees are cleaning the toilet, they envy the one who's cleaned the toilet better. Most of us would not envy them at all because we don't want to clean the toilets. But you ask them, they envy each other. So it's the envy towards the others that leads to a mentality of being a deviant. Nishidhachar is the fourth one, which is accepting things which are forbidden in the scriptures, doing things that are directly pronounced as not to be done in the scriptures. Those slowly make us attached to the things of the world and detached to the things of the spiritual world. And finally, the fifth one is karma, desire. Desires, material desires. I would like to have comforts in my life. Experience material happiness and joy. Either with, as Prabhupada would say, wealth, wine and women. These three. And finally the sixth one, actually there are six. The sixth one is puja. It's not the name of a woman. Puja. Puja here means hankering. Hankering for being worshipped. I don't want fame. I don't want material wealth. But I do wish that people recognize me as someone important, someone worshipable. This is the subtlest and the most difficult of the anathas to go away. And these six result in a deviant mindset. So we will now dwell into who are these 13 upper sampradayas or sects. The first one, and I'm going to group them according to their philosophy. The first one I want to speak about is the Jata Goswamis or Jati Goswamis. Jati means birth, by birth, and Goswami means the controller of the senses. That doesn't make sense. You are a Goswami by birth. So they are Jati Goswamis or Jati Gosai, as they say. These are prevalent in Mayapur, in Bengal, in Bangladesh, and in Vrindavan, and in Mathura. These Jati Goswamis, they are Goswamis by birth. Their last name is Goswami. Amongst many Indians, there are last names like doctor, engineer, because the British conferred those titles to those Indians. Imagine somebody whose last name is a doctor becomes a doctor, as in pretends to be a doctor. It doesn't work like that. So somebody who is born in a so-called Goswami family is not a Goswami. But Jati Goswami is those Goswamis, they own temples in these holy dhams. They consider themselves to be the owners of the deities of the six Goswamis. And they, for example, in Gaudadesh, in Mayapur, they are the ones who consider themselves to be the descendants of Nityananda Prabhu or Advaita Prabhu. Although actually, funny enough, Nityananda Prabhu's son, Veerbhadra Goswami, never had a child. But they still consider themselves to be descendants of Nityananda by some mysterious, unintelligible means. So, and then there are the Goswamis, Jati Goswamis is in another sampradaya, not in Gaudiya sampradaya, where they believe that the rightful candidate who can give Diksha is only one who is born in their family. They can only be Diksha Gurus. These Jati Goswamis, they generally worship Shaligram and they consider they are the only ones who are the right candidates to worship Shaligram. In fact, Srila Prabhupada tells us that Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was about to be murdered by the conspiracy of these Jati Goswamis in Mayapur. They paid 25,000 rupees to a police and said, "We'll kill this Siddhanta Saraswati. Don't do anything. Don't make a case against us." Siddhanta, this Prabhupada says this. By the way, everything I'm saying, if you're wondering what's the source of this, it's only and only from Srila Prabhupada's conversations and his books. Prabhupada says in one of the conversations how Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was about to be killed by these Jati Goswamis. In fact, amongst Bengalis, they consider these Jati Goswamis to be Uttama Adhikaris by birth, and they seek initiation from them. How do these Jati Goswamis make money, make a living? They make a living by deity worship. They make a living by giving Diksha to disciples. And what is their Diksha? They give the Diksha of Siddha Pranali. What is Siddha Pranali? They tell the disciple who the disciple is in the spiritual world as a gopi or a manjari. And they ask the disciple to meditate themselves as a gopi. But there was no basis to it. And by such diksha, the disciple certainly feels exhilarated. But there are no rules to follow. There are no regulations. You could be as you are, but you've suddenly got your spiritual realization, who you are, spiritual world. This is so cheap. And that's why they are sahajiyas. In fact, when Srila Prabhupada took his disciples to Vrindavan for the first time, he asked his disciples to go to the temples of all the Goswamis, six Goswamis, on parikrama. After coming back from the parikrama, one of the sannyasi disciples, who was a sannyasi, Prabhupada had given him title such, such Goswami. This sannyasi disciple told Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada, we went to this temple, this particular temple, where the Goswami of the temple gave us blessings. He said, I bless you that maybe in your future birth, you may become like us, the Goswamis. When Prabhupada heard that, he was furious. He said, at once go to him again and tell him this message. What was the message? He said, tell him that if you may be so fortunate, then after millions of births, you may be born in the Hare Krishna movement. This was Srila Prabhupada. So, these Goswamis, actually Mahaprabhu's mood is different. Mahaprabhu says, Kiba vipro, kiba nyasi, shudra kene noi. I'm not a brahmana, I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not a shudra. Jai Krishna tattva betta, sei guru hoy. He who knows Krishna, Krishna tattva, he is guru. Not one who is born. Now how does this relate to ISKCON? How can this relate to ISKCON? In ISKCON, we'll never have the gross form of Jati Gosai. Like the guru will say, oh well, my child will become the guru. That will never happen in ISKCON. However, there are subtleties in the mindset of a Jati Goswami. The subtleties are based on relationship. The Jati Goswami system works based on relationship, father to child. And even within ISKCON, you know, there is a risk that we get a sense of entitlement because of our relationship with a certain guru, because of our relationship of being in the movement for X number of years, or our relationship with Srila Prabhupada, or our relationship with a certain temple president, or a temple commander, or a head cook, or a whatever, you know, some relationship. And we feel a sense of entitlement. That is the Sahaja mentality. The mentality of entitlement. And the next group or variety is smarthas. The word smartha comes from the word smriti. Those who follow the smritis are smarthas. There are many, many smriti shastras. Smriti means the law books which write about how one should behave, how one should not behave. So Manu, the famous Manu Smriti, is one of the smriti shastras. There are Yajnavalkya Smriti, there are so many Smritis. And these smarthas are generally Brahmins by birth. Again, there is this sense of birth entitlement. They follow Dharma Shastras. And by following Dharma Shastras, they say that all those who don't follow the Dharma Shastras perfectly are less than those who follow. So they themselves, actually Siddhanta Swami Thakur says, there are three kinds of brahmanas. The first is dvija, one who goes through the upanayanam samskar. They are not eligible to, just because they have a brahmin thread, they are not eligible to worship the deity or perform a yajna. For being eligible to do that, one has to become a vipra. Vipra is one who understands the Vedas. But for the Pancharatrika Vidhi, one has to become a Brahmana, a Vaishnava, Vaishnava Brahmana, a Vaishnava Brahmana is superior, or a Vaishnava in general is superior to a Brahmana. In 1911, 108 years ago, the auspicious number, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in a conference of 10,000 Brahmanas. Now bear in mind, Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in a sense, from the Smartha's point of view, did not take his birth in a Brahmana family. Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur or His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, they were not born in a so-called Brahmana family. Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born in a Kayastha family, the same as Narottam Das Thakur. So, it was unique that he was allowed to speak to the 10,000 Smartha Brahmanas, and the topic that he spoke about was Brahmana o Vaishnava Taratamya Vishayak Siddhanta. The comparison between Brahmanas and Vaishnavas. And amongst all the speakers who spoke, the judges, they judged his presentation to be perfect, to be correct. And what did he say? The essence of what he said was that a Vaishnava is superior to the Smartha Brahmanas. It is the same Smartha Brahmanas because of which one of the external reasons for Mahaprabhu taking sannyas was because the Smarthas were against him. When he chanted Gopi, 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 they were against him. So what do these Smarthas do? They're born in a Brahmin family. They only marry their daughters to other Brahmin by birth. They, for example, they'll not accept Mahaprasad before brushing their teeth because they consider it to be offensive. And hence, when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya took Mahaprasad of Lord Jagannath without first brushing his teeth, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very, very pleased. He said, "Ah, you are a Smartha Brahmin, but you are accepting Mahaprasad." Because Mahaprasad, one does not consider whether one is clean or unclean. In fact, the Smarthas consider the Ganga water and the Mahaprasad, when it is taken outside of the dham, it becomes contaminated. These are the kind of things they believe in these different rules and regulations. And what do the Smarthas do? They emphasize on six things. Money. If you are going through some troubles, wear some gems. Mantra. Oh, you're chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, but your Saturn is very weak. So you got to chant the mantra for pleasing Shani Dev. Money, mantra, mudra. Every day you have to do certain mudras. Makha means performing certain yajna. It can become a contagious trend to perform so many different homas and yajnas, authorized and unauthorized. I've heard about Vaishnava yajna and Narsimha yajna, but I was recently invited to somebody's house where they performed a Hanuman yajna. And I said, okay. And they were reasoning it out. Oh, Hanuman is a devotee of Lord Ramchandra. And I said, do you know in Ramayana, Hanuman says, anyone who says Ram three times, Hanuman is ready to serve him. You don't have to do this yajna. You just say Ram, Ram, Ram three times. So we're making these things up as we go along. The smartest thing, oh, you have to go through all the samskaras properly. And the smartest, they speak about different murtis and muhurtas. You have to do certain thing at certain time. Only there it will be successful. So these six things they emphasize on. In fact, they have a mantra for every season, depending on what season it is. Currently, it's the season of Navaratri coming up, where they will tell you, you must chant the mantra of Durga. Otherwise, right now is Pitru Paksha. You must chant these Pitru mantras to please the Pitris. You must do certain things to please the Pitris. This mindset, how is it relevant to ISKCON? These things can creep in. Srila Prabhupada, in fact, in Tehran, in Iran, Prabhupada gave initiations without a yajna. He simply gave, he said, well, we'll all chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra, which is the highest yajna, and I'll give initiation. I'm not condemning those vidhis which are written by Gopala Bhatta Goswami in his Satkriya Sar Deepika. He has given certain yajnas, like we do the yajnas for weddings, we do yajnas for initiation, diksha. I'm not condemning, neither is Srila Prabhupada condemning. But one must understand, as it is mentioned in the sixth canto, that all yajnas are perfected by chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Everything else is subservient to this yajna, Harinam Sankirtan yajna. So in ISKCON, we have many traditionalists. Initially it was a movement of the hippies, and then it became movement of those who are interested in new age. And then it became movement, as it caught up, of so many qualified Indians and many from staunch Brahmana backgrounds. The risk is we introduce things which were never there. Narsimha Yajna, yes. Vaishnava Homa, yes. Wedding Yajna, yes. Diksha Yajna, yes. But so many other things. Recently a devotee told me, I've got a gift for you. I'd gone to India and I've got your chart done. I didn't ask him to do my chart. And he said, you must wear this particular money. And it cost me 30,000 rupees. That's about 380 pounds, 350 pounds. But I want to gift it to you. So he brought it for me. And I said, Prabhu, you're so kind. But I've got no use for it. For I can just chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So, in a subtle sense, what it does, it slices up our faith. Our faith is in Harinam, our faith is in the spiritual life. But if somebody says, well, that is okay, but you need to do this as well. You've sliced up your faith into different pieces, and you're assigning your faith in Harinam, but also want to assign your faith in other things. This is not me, this is Prabhupada in a wonderful class. Prabhupada says this, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur as well. Next, I need to be quick. Next is Prakrita Sahajya. Prakrita means materialist. Sahajya means one who takes it very cheap. We find there are many, many Babajis in all the different dhams that we visit. And these Babajis, for example, Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and this is repeated by Srila Prabhupada, repeated so many times by so many disciples of Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He himself never stayed overnight at Radhakund, and he told his disciples and all his followers, do not stay at Radhakund overnight, because you run a risk. It's not that the place doesn't have potency. And one very well might become eligible to stay at Radhakund forever. But don't do it prematurely. So these Babaji, they are sentimentalists. They, for example, they say one cannot find any fault in one's guru. Even if one's guru is associating with women, drinking wine, one should still not find any fault in one's guru. Sentimentalist. And these Babajis, they express false humility. Sometimes they are so humble that you must believe that they have special mercy of Mahaprabhu. And especially where they live, in the most cherished places in the Dham. Like Prabhupada says, for example, one of the things that they do is they reveal, or they love to speak about these confidential pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Pastimes which are, you know, not to be even spoken to for newcomers or neophytes like myself. They indulge in these discussions. What would happen to a person who has just learned how to swim or is learning how to swim in a 3 feet water, 4 feet in a swimming pool? And you say, right, you now know how to swim. I'll throw you in the English Channel to swim from Dover across to Calais in France. What do you think? Is he going to get there? You cannot swim in waters deep that you've never experienced before. How can you swim in these topics which are beyond our realizations? We can only swim in topics which are limited to our realization. But these Babaji's make it very, very cheap. So these are Prakrita Sahajyas. And not only do they make it cheap, there is complete disregard for rules and regulations. So Srila Prabhupada says in Madhya Leela, in 4th chapter, 147, in the purport, he says, sometimes these Sahajyas, they present themselves as being completely void of desires of reputation, pratishtha, in order to become famous as a humble man. Such people cannot actually attain the platform of the celebrated Vaishnavas. In another place, in Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 24, verse 25 and 20, sorry, 45 and 46 purport, Prabhupada says that it's so important to follow the vidhi mark. Vidhi means sadhana. You have to perform your sadhana. You have to learn how to swim first. Swim consistently. Swim in the deep, in a swimming pool setup, before delving into the beach and then beyond the beach, before trying to cross over the English Channel. Prabhupada says, without serving Krishna according to the Vidhi Marg, regulative principles of the Pancharatrika Vidhi, unscrupulous persons want to jump immediately to the Raga Marg principles. Such persons are called Sahajya. There are also demons who enjoy depicting Krishna and his pastimes with the gopis, taking advantage of Krishna by their licentious character. These demons who print books and write lyrics on the Ragamarg principles are surely on the way to hell. Unfortunately, they lead others down with them. Devotees in Krishna consciousness should be very careful to avoid such demons. Somebody might think, oh, well, that's very strong. Or somebody might think, well, that's very straight, isn't it? Just don't associate with them. And in ISKCON, we may sometimes feel obliged to read so many books, to read outside of the Siddhanta. So it's very important to know what the Siddhanta is. What is Prabhupada's Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's? What is our Gaudiya Siddhanta? To be firmly grounded in our Siddhanta, we can quickly understand the edges. Next is Gauranga Nagari, the fourth group. Gauranga Nagari, Gauranga means Lord Gauranga, and Nagari means a clever lover. So the Gauranga Nagari group, they are mainly found in Bangladesh and Bengal. They have this rasabhas. What is a rasabhas? They consider, for example, Adi Leela chapter 1 verse number 5 reveals what Mahaprabhu's mood was. What was Mahaprabhu's mood? Who was Mahaprabhu? What mood was he experiencing? Srimati Radharani's mood. So here, in Adi Leela 1:5, we see Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalitam Naomi Krishna Swarupam. You know that verse. Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalitam. Mahaprabhu had the mood of Srimati Radharani, not the mood of Krishna. But the Gauranga Nagari, they have this Rasabhas. Rasabhas means a misunderstanding on the platform of rasa. And what is the misunderstanding? They consider Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be in the mood of Krishna. And they consider that he loves his associates like Krishna loved the gopis. So they consider Vishnupriya, his consort, to be Radharani. And so in the temples, the Gauranganagari temples, you have Mahaprabhu and you have Vishnupriya. They worship Mahaprabhu with Vishnupriya. I was taken by a guide in Mayapur to a temple. And I entered inside and very wonderful Vaishnavas with Vaishnav Tilaks, Kanti Mala, chanting Hare Krishna, nice music. And on the altar I saw there was Vishnupriya and Lord Gauranga. And he wanted me to take prasad there. I paid my obeisances and I left. Because we should know how to recognize these upper sampradayas. So, who is Vishnupriya, by the way? In Chaitanya Bhagavad, Vrindandas Thakur says Vishnupriya is Bhudevi. You know, there is Shri Devi and Bhudevi serving Lord Narayan. Vishnupriya is Bhudevi. So, she is not Radharani. Likewise, these Gauranganagaris, they think they are the lovers of Mahaprabhu. They are the gopis and Mahaprabhu will have Rasalila with them. This is imagination. They also make many myths. For example, they say when Mahaprabhu was a young boy, when he was Nimai Pandit, he would go to the banks of the Ganga and he would play pranks with the girls, local girls. And these local girls are his lovers. And he is the lover. And so we want to be like them. These kind of distorted. So they say amongst those girls, there was a prime girl by the name of Kanchana, who was the prime most lover of Mahaprabhu. You all are august. This is an august assembly of Gaudiya Vaishnavas. I am sure you have never heard of these things. But I am speaking it because we should know that such is the rasabhas. And even in ISKCON, sometimes, if we are not careful, we may start promoting things which are neither in the scriptures nor accepted by our Srila Prabhupada or our acharyas, Siddhanta Swami Thakur, Gaurakrishnadas Babaji, Jagannathas Babaji. We just become, you know, ecstatic in our own way. Even in our presentations, we may present things in a class, in a seminar, or in a book or elsewhere, things which are completely imaginary. They are the ripened fruit of our own imagination. And that is the risk. Hence, one needs to be chaste to the Siddhanta. The next groups, two groups, Sakhi Bheki and Chudadhari. Sakhi Bheki. I was in Vrindavan 1995-96 and Vrindavan Temple. And there was this, it was, you know, I was just standing in front of the deities and praying and suddenly there was this musical band coming in with a group of 20-25 men. They were all dressed up as women. With sindoor, with beautiful, and I for once thought they were, you know, like in India you have the eunuchs, the one, you know, so, but they were not, because they were not, they were dressed as women, that's it. They didn't put any makeup and they start playing, singing different songs and going around. And I asked one brahmachari, who are these people? Who are these women, men, how do I say it, but who are they? And the brahmachari said, oh, they are Sakhi Bheki. They come sometimes. I've not seen them ever since in Vrindavan, but they are there in Vrindavan. The Sakhi Bheki, they dress up as gopis. Because they think by externally dressing up as gopis, they can feel the mood of the gopis. How cheap. is that I can dress up as a doctor and then I'll feel I'm fit enough to perform a heart surgery, you know. How wonderful is that if that was possible? The Chudadhari is even more riskier. Chuda means peacock feather. Dhari means to wear. So these dress up as Krishna. They carry a flute with them. They play a wonderful flute. They dress up as Krishna. They don't paint themselves blue, but they do dress up as Krishna with a peacock feather. And they do Rasa Leela with different women. And they think, if the Lord does it, why should we not? This is how cheap they take it. So, how is it relevant to ISKCON? In ISKCON, I'm sure this would never happen. The grossest form of this upper sampradaya. However, there was always a risk. There's always a risk. The risk is that we dress up, we behave, we walk, and we talk. But we don't walk the talk, talk the walk, whatever it is called. Yeah. We just walk and we just talk and just behave and just dress like a renounced senior Vaishnava. Whereas actually we are full of anarthas within. And this is exactly what the Sakibeki and the Chudadhari do in the grossest form. The next group is, in fact, you know, I want to read one thing in Madhya Leela chapter 22. There's a beautiful verse which says, Mahaprabhu says, those who are actually on Ragamark, those who are Raganuga, real Raganuga devotees, how do they behave? The real Raganuga devotees, those who are really on spontaneous loving platform, it's a beautiful description. It says, Bahya antaro ihar duito sadhana. Raganuga bhakti is bahya and antara. There is internal Raganuga bhakti and external Raganuga bhakti. So externally, how do you recognize the Raganuga bhakta? Bahya sadhaka dehe kore shravana kirtana. Bahya, externally, they are just like all the other sadhakas. Externally, they look just like everyone else. And externally, they perform sadhana. They never miss their rounds. They never fall down from their sadhana. Kore shrabana kirtana. They listen to Krishna katha. They do kirtan of Krishna. Bahya, externally, they are just like all the other devotees. But mane nija siddha dehe koriya bhavana. In their mind, internally, they are acting according to their siddha deha, according to their original form, swarupa. This is very high. But even they, although they are that high, they do not make an external show of who they are. Ratri dine kore braje krishnera sevana. Day and night, in their mind and their heart, they are serving Krishna in Vrindavan. Like our Srila Prabhupada. He is a realized pure soul. But except for some glimpses at some points in time. For example, I was listening to one class and I shared it in many WhatsApp groups. Where Prabhupada was saying a simple sentence. He was saying, Krishna, all I have is yours. And by simply saying that, Prabhupada starts crying. His voice becomes, you know, very thick, and he has tears in his eyes, and you can hear that. And just that sentence was, and then immediately Prabhupada controls himself, and he's then continuing with the class. Sometimes we get a glimpse, because it's overwhelming emotions of a pure devotee. But Prabhupada never made a show of who he was. Because that is what a Raganuga Bhakta is. But Sakibeki and Chudadhari, they want to show. Do not perform devotional service for demonstration. It's very cheap if we demonstrate our love. We are not wanting to demonstrate. We simply want to perform, practice. Ativadi. The next group, seventh group, is Ativadi. Now this is another group. In 1871, we know Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he confronted a person called Bisha. What's the name? Bishan Kishan. Bishan Kishan. This Bishan Kishan was a yogi who wanted to kill Bhaktivinoda Thakur. This Bishan Kishan was from Ativadi Sampradaya. Not Sampradaya, but sect. Upper Sampradaya. So, there was actually one Jagannath Das who was a disciple of Haridas Thakur. And this Jagannath Das, he once bypassed Swarup Damodar to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Swarup Damodar would vet everyone who would approach Mahaprabhu. He would scrutinize them and ensure they are the right level of devotee and genuine devotee before they would meet Mahaprabhu. But once this Jagannath Das, he bypassed Swarup Damodar and he met Mahaprabhu and he told Mahaprabhu, please read this. I have written 5 chapters on Bhagavatam. Did you hear that right? I have not written commentary. I have written 5 chapters. In addition to what is there in Bhagavatam, I have written these additional 5 chapters, which glorify you as Krishna. And Mahaprabhu said, oh, Tumi Ativadi, you are a great person. Mahaprabhu in his humility said, you are such a great person. How can I even understand what you have written? Please go. So he thought it was a compliment to be called Ativadi. So this is the Ativadi Apasampradaya from him. He later on promoted that he is Radharani and Mahaprabhu is Krishna. And this Ativadi Sampradaya is still in existence. Many followers in Jagannath Puri, they have a mutt. I will not name it, otherwise you might be tempted to go there. Yeah. I have done my going around in Jagannath Puri, all nooks and corners, and this particular mutt I went into and I said, oh, this is Ativadi. So this Ativadi, you know, they are sweet singers. And this Jagannath Das, he was such a sweet singer, many women would get attracted and then he would allow these women to massage him. When Maharaj Pratap Rudra, this is Mahaprabhu's time, when Maharaj Pratap Rudra found out, he chastised him and he put him into prison. And this Jagannath Das said, well, I don't discriminate between men and women, so you should not chastise me. They're such is their gross behaviors. In fact, if you, anyone from Orissa here? Any Odia? No? In Orissa, the most famous translation in Orissa of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is by Jagannath Das. Even today, people in Orissa, they read this Jagannath Das is, you know, like in Maharashtra, they read Jnaneshwari. They don't read Bhagavad Gita. They read Jnaneshwar's own composition of Bhagavad Gita. Like that in Odisha, people are still reading Jagannath Das's Bhagavad Gita and in Odia and Bhagavatam. Anyway, so how is this relevant to ISKCON? We may run a risk of presenting ourselves as more learned, as more wise than what our acharyas have given us. When I say our acharyas, I mean Srila Prabhupada, Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and so on and so forth. We may consider that we know more, we understand more, we realize more than what they have provided us. Just like Jagannath Das thought that he understood more than what was there in the Bhagavatam. I will now group together number 8, 9, 10 and 11 of these upper sampradayas, which are known as Aula, Baula, Sai, and Darvesh. Aula means, it comes from the Sanskrit word Kulata. Kulata means women who are unchaste. So the Aula sampradaya, there are still Aulas in Bangladesh, and there is a new Aula now in Bangladesh. Anyway, so the Aulas, they are the first stage of realization. They consider themselves to be Purusha and their wives to be Prakriti. And they enact the eternal leelas of the Lord. Thankfully, with their own wives. But still, it is distorted. It is gross, weird distortion. They are married men. So, I won't say much in this esteemed August audience may not be able to hear the principles of Aula. But Aula means unchaste women. They think that they have to behave like the gopis who were unchaste women. Such is their lowly mentality. Baula means a madman. Now the Baulas are wanderers. In fact, there's one very famous Baula who sang at the Albert Hall in London. They are very good kirtaniyas. You see, kirtaniya does not mean you simply sing. You sing for the pleasure of the Lord and the Vaishnavas. But before you sing, you follow very strictly your sadhana. You follow very strictly the principles outlined by Srila Prabhupada. Then the kirtan is effective. When Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was about to leave this world, there was one particular brahmachari who was singing. He was known to be the best kirtaniya. And Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur told him, silent, go away. And he asked another brahmachari who was very well known not to be able to sing. To sing. Shri Rupa Manjari Pada. And with that meditation, he left. Because to sing with a beautiful voice, accompanied by these wonderful instruments, is not the perfection of kirtan. The Baulas, they have perfected the art of kirtan. In fact, they sing in the perfect ragas. And if you are training in Varanasi, or in Vrindavan, or in Mathura, or in Kamvan, or in Barsana, or in Puri, or in Godadesh, in Mayapur or Calcutta, you are most likely to find a good kirtan teacher to be from the Baula Sampradaya. But what do Baulas believe? They believe in no rules and regulations. Simply by chanting, without following any rules and regulation, you can realize Krishna. Because the holy name is the most powerful. So what's the need for any rules and regulation? This is the distorted thinking. The third category is Sai. Now there are many Sais. And these Babas called Sai, there are many. There are currently there are many. And in the past there were Alak Sai and Shridhar Sai. And these, it's a sampradaya. And the Sai, their main belief is just be virtuous, just be good, just do good, speak good. Do good, be good, speak good. But in your own personal life, you can do what you want. No rules, no regulations. So this, they are mendicants and they are also syncretists. Syncretists means those who synthesize between different religious groups. So mostly the people of this Sai faith, they have some influence of the Sufi mystics who were predominant in India due to the Persian influence, the Turkish influence. And so the Sai Sampradaya or Upper Sampradaya, they mainly follow a mashup of Hinduism and Sufism and Islam. And the last one, which belongs to the same bucket, is Darvesh. This is a Bengali word, but But the original word is a Persian word, is an Iranian word, darvish. Darvish, dar means, in Iranian means a door, which comes from the Sanskrit word dwar. Actually, many Iranian Persian words come from Sanskrit directly. Darvish means door, and I think vishan, or you'll have to help me, Matsji. What's the word for begging? Vishan or something? Okay. But in Farsi, vishan, I think, means to beg. So darvish means beggar at the door. So these are beggars. They are beggars. In Turkey, if you go to Turkey, you see these Turkish swirling dance. Have you seen? Yeah? They are from dervish. They call themselves dervish. And they don't, they are original dervish. They would not take bath. They would just beg from door to door. And their emphasis is not on scholarship, but on simply through one's own experience, you can realize God. By living as a mendicant, through one's own experience, there is no basis, there is no scripture. This is dervish. So this dervish is also a sampradaya very prevalent in India. And how does this relate to ISKCON? Obviously, we will not ever fall into the trap of these gross forms of upper sampradaya. However, if we make our practice superficial, our siddhanta superficial, then we would definitely fall into the trap of simply mundane goodness and nothing more. The next, number 12, is Karta Bhaja. Now this is, there was one person called Kartaram Sharan, and I think his guru was there, Alok Chand or something like that. Alok Chand. Karta. Now the Karta Bhaja, they are an interesting group. And they are also predominant in Bengal, Puri and other places. They believe that their guru, who is Karta, they refer to him as Karta, which means master. And Bhaja means to worship. They worship their guru as God. So it's just like a tinge of Mayavad philosophy. So, but it's very interesting. It's like a semi-Mayavad. So the followers are not God. Neither can they become God. Unless they become a guru. And the guru is God. Achindya Bhedavet Tattva says guru is like God. But not God. But the Karta Bhaja, they say guru is God. So in a Karta Bhaja temple, they don't worship Radha and Krishna. Even if they do have Radha and Krishna, the Radha and Krishna deities will be on one side. Maybe Ram Sita will be on one side. In the center will be their guru on the altar. And sometimes those deities will not be there. They only worship their guru, and in fact they only chant the holy name of their guru's name. So this is the distortion of understanding or misunderstanding the position of the guru. How does this relate to us as ISKCON? Well, I don't have to speak much. We already have a lot of distortions around the position of Srila Prabhupada and the position of the present ISKCON gurus. You know, a lot of distortion, distorted thinking about its validity and the rest. And we have the Ritviks and so many others, and everyone has their own views. So these distortions are like upper sampradaya. And finally, there is Neda Nadi. Neda Nadi, Neda means a shaven-headed man, and Nadi means a shaven-headed woman. And these are found mainly in Vrindavan. You find these shaven-headed men and women in white. They have beautiful grey tilak and kantimala, and they are chanting. And by the way, all these sahajyas externally look better than I look right now. They are really dressed up to look like a devotee. Or something mysterious, something very, very wonderful. But this Neda Nadi, Veerbhadra Goswami, he converted 1,000 Buddhist monks to Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And these Buddhist monks, there was actually a monk by the name of Achyutananda Das. And he was, during Sanatan Goswami's visit to Puri, he was influenced by Sanatan Goswami. And so he adopted Vaishnavism, Gaudiya Vaishnavism. This Achyutananda Das was the leader of the Neda Nadi Buddhist monks. However, after prolonged association with the Vaishnavas, he decided that Vaishnavism is not for him. So he went back to Mahananda, who was his Buddhist guru. And Mahananda preached him to become Buddhist again. And so this Achyutananda has written many, many works. For example, he says, I worship Chaitanya as Buddha. So this kind of distortion, philosophical. Srila Prabhupada also, he's in Los Angeles, he wrote a letter to Hayagriva Prabhu, 15 January 1968, where one of Prabhupada's sannyasi, who was previously a son of a Christian minister, he took sannyas from Prabhupada, and he was then trying to distort the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy and align it to Christianity. He was giving position of Prabhupada as Jesus and all kinds of things, and the Trinity was something, and all distortions he was bringing in into ISKCON. It's unfortunate as we grow older. Actually, our minds go in reverse. And the older we get, the greater risk we face to actually go back to those principles and those impressions and those samskaras that we have received as a child. And so many times we see many, many leaders across the world, as they become older, they actually go back to the roots. And Prabhupada wrote this letter and he said, now it is understood from the letter that you've sent that he, this particular sannyasi, does not believe in parampara or in the necessity of scriptural authority. He seems to feel that there's a sort of tyranny. That means, after taking sannyas and understanding the philosophy for more than a year, he has changed the whole view, and I do not understand how you would like his recent doctrine. So Prabhupada is saying how this sannyasi was actually reverting back to certain things he might have learned in his childhood. And that's the risk. As our bodies become frail, our mind becomes weak, we tend to go back to that which we have learned as children. And hence, it's very important to have a nice Vaishnava upbringing, to have those impressions. So these are the Sahajiyas and some mentions of how they are still relevant. In fact, you know, there was one, Alok Chandra, I think his name is. He has written a book where he's mentioned 56 Sahajiyas. I've only mentioned 13 because Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions 13. But there are innumerable varieties of Sahajiyas. And Srila Prabhupada mentions in the purport, these symptoms of Mahaprabhu are indicative of Mahabhav, or the highest ecstasies. Sometimes Sahajiyas artificially imitate these symptoms, but experienced devotees reject them immediately. And it is to that effect, experienced devotees reject them immediately, that I thought I'll emphasize. And by the instruction of Krishna Dharma Prabhu, I chose to speak on this topic. So one has to be extremely careful. And as far as the ecstasies of Mahaprabhu is concerned, well, these ecstasies cannot be understood simply by one's own endeavor. I will end by saying that, just like we say, even the guru, no matter who describes these ecstasies, one cannot understand, because even the guru cannot make one understand these ecstasies. What do I mean by that? We chant the mantra, Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Ajnana Timirandhasya, I am blinded by darkness. But what darkness is this? If we understand the verse, this is a darkness, not because we are blind. We have eyes which are perfect and we can see perfectly. However, we are blinded because our eyes have been shut. The andhakar, the blind, the darkness is not because we don't have eyes to see, but because our eyes are shut. And what does the guru do? Two things. Nananjana. He gives knowledge which is like the ointment which he applies to the closed eyes. Shalakaya. And sometimes he gives piercing instructions. Shalaka means piercing needle. With a needle, with a tong, he force opens. Chakshuhu unmilitam. He forces open the eyes. Yena, to that guru we pay our obeisances. The important and the subtle point to understand there is that even the guru cannot show us. It is we who will see. It is the guru who will do the opening of the eyes. But it is our own eyes through which we see. So it is only through our own spiritual maturity that we can see, we can learn, we can experience the mood that is exemplified by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We cannot simply understand it. Like one cannot describe the world. If I have chosen to close my eyes and ask you to describe the room, no matter how hard you try, you will not be able to describe it. All you need to do is to open my eyes and me use my eyes to see the room. And that is the meaning of this beautiful verse that we chant. Om adnanti virandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave nama. With this verse, I pay my obeisances to the Guru Parampara, Srila Prabhupada, Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others, that may they always enlighten us on the right path. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Samveda Bhaktivrinda ki jai.